ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival for Wednesday evening, January 25th, year of our Lord, 2017. James Corbett will be our guest after the first break. James will be here for two segments, barring the unforeseen. The good Lord's will, and James will be here. And in the meantime, we'll give you the market report for today, and then a few comments on items in the news. Gold is down $7.80 to $1,201.70 an ounce. Silver is down 7 cents to $17.08 per ounce. Platinum is down 16 to $983. Palladium is down $58. Down $58. To $734 per ounce. I don't know who got mad at palladium, but there must be an explanation. I assume there's an explanation, but that's certainly, what was it? 50? Oh, let me look at it now. $58 an ounce down one day. Pretty amazing. Dow Jones is up 155 points, almost 156 points to 20,068. They finally broke the 20,000 barrier. NASDAQ is up 55 points to 5,656. New York Stock Exchange is up 90 points to 11,339. Standard & Poor's is up 18 points to 2,298. And the U.S. dollar index is down today. It is down as we speak to 99.88. Now, this is pretty. This is interesting. I don't know that it's necessarily all that remarkable, but it's interesting because it was just the last week, 10 days, that the U.S. dollar index was up over 103. For the first time in something like 14 years, and all of a sudden, bang, we have dropped back down to below 100, and we'll see. It's just barely below 100, but it looks like the increase in value in the dollar may have gone as far as it's going to go, and we are now going to see some measure of inflation, which means the dollar will become worth less than it is right now, which means it should fall on the U.S. dollar index. How far it can go, I don't know. I've seen one report. Somebody thinks in 90 days it could fall down to 90 on the U.S. dollar index. Maybe yes, maybe no. But it does appear that we are into a moment of inflation, in part because Trump has said he says the dollar is too strong and he wants it lower. Well, I don't know how much he can do to make it lower, but I'm sure if anyone can make it lower, Mr. Trump is one of them. So we'll watch and see, and we're perhaps going to see more inflation. The dollar falls, and if it does, price of gold will go up, as will other things, including gas and oil and food and clothing and utilities, and who knows what all is going to rise. But crude oil is at $53.21 right now as we speak. It was up 0.46 for the day, $53.21 per barrel. Interesting day in the news. Trump is all over the news. What all has Trump done today? Let me see if I can find out. We'll talk more about what Trump has done when I get James Corbett on the program after the first break. Trump is to order construction of the U.S.-Mexico border wall. Trump preps a Muslim ban on visas for people from Muslim countries coming into this country. Going to put a ban on there. They're not coming around anymore. Trump is willing to work. Now, this is something we'll talk about. This is something we'll talk about when James Corbett gets here. This is interesting. I'm going to be fascinated, at least I expect to be fascinated, by James Corbett's observations on this. Trump is willing to work with Russia to go after the Islamic State in Syria. Now, there are all sorts of ramifications there. All of a sudden, the United States is maybe working with Russia. Does it mean that the days for the Islamic State are just about ended? Are they about to just they're going to go belly up. If this is the, if these are true stories, are they going to go belly up? What's it mean? What's it mean to the United States' relationship to Syria? We've been trying to get President Assad thrown out of office for years, several years now. And if we're going to work with the Russians who are trying to support President Assad, does this, is this evidence that the United States policy is now pro-Syrian government, pro-Assad? And what about Israel? Israel is building another 2,500 homes in the occupied territories. They're going to expand the size of Israel a little bit more, and the Palestinians, of course, are going to be, they're going to be angry about all this. They're doing this in large measure, or at least to a significant degree, because Trump is in office, and Trump is an ally of Israel, where Obama was not. If we are going to have a closer relationship to Russia, what's going to happen? What is, what's going to happen with Israel? Is Israel also going to have a closer relationship with Russia? They've been at least verbal antagonists for some time. Is, if Russia is our friend, does that make Russia the friend of Israel too? We'll go, we'll run that story, we'll run those questions by James Corbett when he gets here later on in the program and see what he has to say about that. Where's, what's his opinion? Let me see, what do I have here? Here's one. Here's a bill that's in Oklahoma. This is only a state legislature bill. This is not for the country. It's not national legislation, and it's not even legislation. It's only proposed right now, but nevertheless, it deals with smart meters, and it was reported by Technocracy News. Okay, a bill to defy feds will allow opt-out of smart meters. That's the headline. Smart meters monitor home energy usage in minute detail in real time. The devices transmit data to the utility company, where it gets stored in databases. Anyone with access to the data can download it for analysts. Without specific criteria limiting access to the data, these devices create significant privacy issues. Smart meters can also be used to remotely limit power usage during peak hours. If somebody wants to shut off the power to your house, they can do it. Right? And they can watch, and they can tell what's going on in your house by watching the electrical power you're using, and they can apparently, I've heard stories, I don't know if they're completely true, that they can even tell which devices are being used in the house. Now, I don't know that that's true, but they can watch you fairly closely. A bill pre-filed in the Oklahoma House of Representatives would ensure utility customers could opt out of installing smart meter technology on their homes and businesses. Passage of the bill would allow Oklahomans to protect their own privacy, and it would be a step toward blocking a federal program in effect. Under this proposed bill, any person or lawfully recognized business entity shall have the right to decline the installation of a smart meter or any similar device that monitors electrical usage in real time, so on and so forth, while encrypting smart meter data. And warrant requirements for law enforcement address some of the privacy issues. Refusing to allow a smart meter on your property is the only surefire way to ensure that the energy use data won't fall into the hands of government agents or private marketers, or end up stored in some kind of a government database. Where are we? The point is, Oklahoma at least is sufficiently concerned, or at least a couple of legislatures in Oklahoma are sufficiently concerned with government spying on American people. They say we need to change this. I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good step in the right direction, and I think it's consistent with the Trump election. This is part of an anti-establishment attitude that's evolving and perhaps expanding in this country. We said, look, we've had enough of you people who think you're so smart that you can monitor us and keep an eye on us so you can tell us what to do. We don't need you to tell us what to do. Go away. Get yourself a real job. Stop sucking off the American people. Huh? Here's someone in this, whoever wrote the article in Technocracy News about the smart meter bill. It says, we've seen similar opt-out movement undermining Common Core in New York. Opting out follows the strategy James Madison advised in Federalist Number 46, where he said, refusal to cooperate with officers of the Union provides a powerful means to fight back against government overreach. He's not saying don't have to shoot, don't have to bomb, you don't have to fight, burn the post office. No, you just have to refuse to cooperate. And it's a scary thing. It's easy to say, and not many of us really have the nerve to refuse to cooperate with the government when the time comes. But it's the sort of thing that, at least in theory, slows the government down. It's like putting sand in the gears. You know, it's like traffic tickets. Virtually everyone who gets a traffic ticket just puts a check in the mail and sends it to the courthouse. If 10% of the people who receive traffic tickets would go to court to contest them, even if they didn't win in court, the burden on the system, 10% of the people went to court who received traffic tickets, the system couldn't deal with that many people coming to court to process the traffic tickets. The cost and the expense and the slowdown would be so enormous that they would have to stop issuing traffic tickets, or at least substantially stop. Right? They'd have to, from then on, just give them a warning. If they're driving, they don't have their seatbelt fastened, fine, just give them a warning. All right? They're going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, nobody got hurt, give them a warning. 10%. The point is that we, if those of us who are concerned about government regulation and government overreach, in large measure we have no one to blame but ourselves. We put up with it. We put up with it, and we don't have to fight, we don't have to shoot, we don't have to bomb. All we got to do is say, okay, I'm taking this, I'm going to court. And next thing you know, the real cost of setting up that courtroom and putting the judge up there and putting the court reporter and the bailiff and the prosecuting attorney has to get ready for the case and so on, and bring the police officer in because he's going to have to testify as a witness, which means he can't be out on the street issuing tickets. By the time you get done, it probably costs, it realistically, it probably costs, it might, I don't know what it costs for an absolute fact, but there is a good chance that if you consider all the financial ramifications of taking one traffic ticket to court, could be that it costs $1,000, maybe more. Costs the city, this county, whoever's issuing the municipality, it costs them $1,000, maybe more, to process a traffic ticket where they only expect to collect what? $200? $500? How much does it cost to take that police officer off the street and put him up there where he has to be available to testify? How much do you lose by bringing the officer in? It's his pay during the 2-3 hours that are going to be tied up, for being there in advance, waiting for the ticket. By the time he goes back to the job, he's lost 2 or 3 hours. There's no revenue coming in, plus his pay, plus the judge's pay, plus the prosecutor's pay, plus the bailiff, plus the court reporter, all right, plus paperwork and whatever. All it takes, in a lot of regards, is simply a refusal to cooperate. James Madison advised it in Federalist Number 46. Refuse to cooperate. Don't have to fight. Don't have to shout. Don't have to shove. Don't have to swear, curse, whatever. All you got to do is just, I think I'll go to court. I think it's a good insight. Here's another one. This is Trump again. I mean, we should have, instead of CNN or Fox News, maybe we should just have Trump News, because he has been an extraordinary source of information and news and events just in the last few days. Took office and all of a sudden, bang, 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 one thing after another just seems to be happening. I had expected that Trump would, in a sense, he'd get into the White House and, you know, he'd kind of look around and get the feel of the place before he started doing anything. And apparently he was busy he came in, sat down at the desk and started signing memorandums. He was ready to go. And he's not wasting any time. Here's another one. This is Trump again. And then this is from the Brownsville Herald, Brownsville, Texas. White House website is no longer available in Spanish. Donald Trump, right? He takes office, and next thing you know, the Spanish language pages on the White House website vaporize, disappear, they're gone. Want to know what's going on? read English. You don't want to read English? Go away. President Donald Trump, who chided his opponents during the campaign for speaking Spanish, has made a tangible change to the White House website to eliminate bilingual access. Spokesman Sean Spicer suggested the translation option may return, but Nathan made no specific comment on timing when asked about it on Monday. John Michael Torres, communications coordinator for La Unión del Pueblo Entero, remained cautiously optimistic. He said, he's obviously in favor of maintaining Spanish language. He says, I hope that's just a matter of time before they translate and get it up again. He says, I'm not sure how the process works, but I would imagine they would take a lot of care. And to not have the information in Spanish sends a message that really isn't one of their priorities. Well, it might not be one of the priorities to the Spanish people, but I think it might be a priority to the English-speaking people in this country. There's a situation here where we are supposed to... I've seen reports where one school district in New York City actually has something like 25 different languages. They are teaching classes in 25 different languages in that school. Look, you can't do that. You come in here. If you're coming to this country, you must come here to learn the language. You must come here to embrace this culture. Because the reason you're coming is because you want what this culture has to offer. And you can't come here and say, oh, now that we're here, we don't need to learn to speak English and we don't need to embrace the culture that has been common in the United States of America. We can bring our own culture and set up our own little enclave. The reason people are coming from Mexico, for example, is that Mexico sucks. And the reason Mexico sucks is because it's overwhelmed by a Mexican culture that is not conducive to prosperity. And when Mexican people get up here, the next thing they say, oh, we need more Mexicans. And the truth of the matter is we certainly don't need more of the Mexican culture. It failed for the Mexican people. It's not going to do us any good. People may think these alternative cultures may be colorful and they might be entertaining, but the truth of the matter is your culture will determine your standard of living. It'll determine your level of technology. It'll determine your life expectancy. And given the significance of your culture, that is to say your system of values, the importance of that system of values, you can't just say, oh, let's bring in some Muslims. They do so well in the Middle East. They'll make a big contribution. No, they won't. Not if they cling to the Muslim culture. The Mexican people, not bad people, but if they're coming here and thinking that they can get the same thing with the Mexican culture in this country that they couldn't get the prosperity in this culture with Mexican culture that you couldn't get in Mexico, I think it's a mistake. We're going to take a break, couple of commercial announcements. We'll be back with James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com in just a moment. Please stay tuned. Welcome to your life.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report. Some of the best audios, videos, articles that you can find on the internet on geopolitical, economic questions. And hello, James, how are you?
I'm not doing too bad. How about yourself?
Well, you sound like you're not absolutely. Sound if you're. You, when we were talking before, you said your family is geeky.
Yeah, well,
maybe you're not.
You need to be honest. Yeah, I'm a little
maybe you're not so geeky right now. What do you think about? What do you think about the Trump phenomena? All right, I don't know if we can call it a phenomena or not, but do you remember another president taking office who seemed to raise as many waves as quickly as Trump has?
Not in my political lifespan, certainly not. Yeah. But I don't think this is surprising, given everything that was running up into this election. I mean, we knew there were going to be some pretty big events, and of course, there just given who Trump is and who his opposition is, there we know there's going to be large protests and things of that sort as well. So there's just a lot of scrutiny on what's going on, and obviously, you know, this is the time to make the big moves if you're a deal maker. So it's going to be a very interesting first 100 days.
Oh yeah, I understand. I'm not a fan of Obama. All right. I actually supported him when he came into office. I thought he'd be all right. I couldn't imagine anybody could be worse than Bush Jr. And silly me, I was wrong about that. But I'm not a fan of Obama, but just the same, I look back to the 8 years of Obama, and in a lot of regards, I know it's not necessarily, it's a subjective opinion, but it's almost as if Trump is doing more in the first week than Obama did in several years. Do you think that opinion is completely misguided, or am I still ginky?
I think it's difficult to say. Certainly there are a lot of executive orders that are coming, but there generally are, and people might remember the first few days of Obama's administration. If you were looking at it from the same lens, expecting there to be a lot of change, you might have gotten caught up in all of the talk and the sort of the flash and the seeming details of things. So, for example, I mean, Obama came in talking, for example, about the most transparent administration in history, and we're going to get rid of lobbyists and blah, blah, blah. And of course, that was quickly proven to all be lies and fabrications. But at any rate, if you were just reading the statements and looking at the sort of flash of it, it might have looked very impressive at the moment that he came in. And similarly, we might get caught up in this sort of Trump mania and, wow, look, everything's changing so quickly. For example, I was just reading about this latest thing about Trump is going to be trying or not pulling the U.S. out of the U.N., but limiting U.S. involvement in the U.N., which is a grabbing title and grabbing headline. But when you drill down into the story, this executive order that apparently the New York Times saw, you know, in advance or has seen a leaked copy or what have you, they're saying it includes clauses like, for example, ensuring that the U.S. does not fund the International Criminal Court, which it already doesn't. There is no U.S. funding that goes to the ICC. Or there was another clause, something about automatically limiting U.S. involvement in any any UN administration or bureaucracy that in any way recognizes the Palestinian Authority. Again, all that's already done. And in fact, we saw that when UNESCO officially acknowledged Palestine a few years ago, and the Obama administration immediately pulled U.S. funding from UNESCO. So, again, this is it seems like a very startling thing, but when you actually get down to the details, maybe nothing has actually changed significantly yet. So, again, we have to see how this shakes out before we start, you know.
I agree with that. But we've got here's something from Fox News. It says, Trump to order construction of U.S. Mexico border wall, expected to suspend refugee program. President Trump on Wednesday is expected today, of course, is expected to order the construction of his long-promised wall along the U.S.-Mexico border and to take other action on immigration. He's going to curb funding to sanctuary cities that don't arrest or detain immigrants living in the U.S. illegally, bolstering 5,000 new agents for the Border Patrol, yada yada. What do you think? Is this, you know, it's, he promised it. I mean, from my perspective, the great thing about any of this is it at least looks like he's trying to keep his promises, his political campaign promises. That all by itself is a, what, when was the last time I saw a politician who tried to keep his political campaign promises? I'm trying to remember. I never paid any attention where I bought my.
Trump seems like he's
doing it.
Do they ever follow through on the things that you actually want them to follow through on? As always, the devil's in the details. So I haven't I'm not sure if these executive orders have been released yet, but at any rate, so I see stories that are quoting them. So, for example, it's an instruction to the Homeland Security Secretary to take, quote, steps to immediately plan, design, and construct a physical wall along the southern border in order to achieve complete operational control of the southern border. And it even defines a wall as a contiguous physical wall or other similarly secure, contiguous, and impassable physical barrier. Okay, good enough. So that's a start, and that does seem to be a fulfillment of at least half of the promise that was made in the campaign. The other half, of course, who's going to pay for the wall? Mexico. So apparently negotiations are going to begin, quote, relatively soon on how Mexico is going to be forced to pay for this wall. And Trump is quoted as saying, I'm telling you there will be a payment. It will be in a form, perhaps a complicated form. We're going to stabilize on both sides of the border, and we also understand that a strong and healthy economy in Mexico is very good for the United States. So again, I'll be very interested to see how Mexico is made to pay for this, but it's interesting to see the movement.
Made to even appear to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. For example, if we're going to have tariffs, if Trump is going to raise tariffs on our borders, and particularly with Mexico, then he's got a negotiating strategy where he can say, look, Mr. President of Mexico, we'll only raise the tariff barrier this high if you agree to send us X number of dollars for the wall. There's a certain amount of leverage there. They might not get the money, what I'm trying to say, but they might get cooperation instead, with which Trump can say, oh, see, I got them to pay for it by cooperating with us rather than... you follow what I'm saying?
Yep. Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes. And of course, the other side of this is the immigration issue generally. And so apparently there are part of the orders are talking about stripping federal grants from sanctuary states and cities that harbor illegal immigrants. So that is a significant step. And of course, again, we'll have to see how enforcement actually plays out on this. But I think this is exactly the step that is necessary on probably one of the most important issues for a lot of Trump voters. So I think this is obviously going to play very well with the base that voted for him.
It's going to be one of those things that says he's for real. He can't back out of this.
Exactly.
Right? He might not be able to get
the
Mexicans
down from
to
this,
pay
I think
for
so.
It, but he's got to put up a wall, or everyone's going to, his candidacy, his presidency will be kind of a farce.
Yes.
Another one here from International Business Times. The headline is Trump Preps Muslim Ban. President Donald Trump was set to sign an executive order temporarily banning the entry into the U.S. for people traveling from a number of predominantly Muslim countries, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Sudan, Yemen. Specifically, the U.S. will automatically block any visa of any person traveling from any of the above listed countries. Also includes the temporary immigration ban on those who are refugees. He's hitting the ground running. Is this a good thing, a bad thing? Will Muslims kind of understand this, or will they be highly offended?
Well, I would assume that they would be offended, being discriminated against essentially on their religious beliefs. But I think the point of this is that, of course, there's no, you can't give people a test, are you a Muslim, as they come into the country, because even if you did do that, I mean, people could just lie and say, nope, okay, you're in. So it isn't that type of ban. It's a ban on areas that are predominantly Muslim. Iran, yep. Iraq, Libya, Syria, Somalia. So again, I understand this is exactly what his voters wanted, what his base wanted, but for people who actually care about a government overreach of power and what that actually means and the idea of civil liberties of some sort, although of course that doesn't apply to people who are not American citizens, as we all know it only applies to Americans. But the idea here is not Muslims per se, it's just anyone from a Muslim country. So even if you're a Christian, if you happen to be living in, you know, Syria, too bad for you.
Trump is he's alleged to be having an effect all over the world. Some people are blaming him or praising him, depending on your perspective, for strengthening the anti-European Union movement in the Eurozone. Israel, for example, here's something from Reuters. Israel plans more than 2,500 new settler homes to start the Trump era. This is the second declaration since U.S. President Donald Trump took office, signaling he would be more accommodating towards such projects than his predecessor. Israel is apparently delighted to see Mr. Trump in office and relieved to see Mr. Obama gone. All right. Is Trump really responsible to a significant degree for new 2,500 settler homes to be built in what was once Palestinian territory? Is he actually responsible for that significantly, or is it just more of a coincidence?
Well, I mean, to the extent that an American red light or green light or yellow light on the issue of settlement in particular and sort of general Israeli-Palestinian relations in general, to the extent that that is taken seriously in Tel Aviv, and I think it is, then obviously they have gotten a gigantic flashing neon-colored green light from the incoming Trump administration, which includes, of course, Trump's designated ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, who is notable for being, if anything, more of a Likudnik than Netanyahu himself, and has talked about there is no two-state solution. It's only going to be Israel, and they want to move the embassy to Jerusalem, probably the most incredibly destabilizing thing you could think of doing in that situation diplomatically, he's advocated for. You have other people who are going to be in charge of overseeing the Israel-Palestinian issue in the Trump administration are, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but he was an ex-settler himself. So, who worked, carried an M16 and worked guard duty at a settlement in Gaza. So, again, I mean, it's, there's no doubt whatsoever that this administration is going to be the most friendly towards Israel that we've seen in recent memory, and of course more friendly than the Obama administration was, and that has to be taken, as I say, as a big green light for Tel Aviv to start pressing the issue.
Is it a good thing, a bad thing? And what I mean by that is Trump does seem to be having a strange effect that not just confined to the United States, it goes beyond that. Is this strengthening Israel or is it destabilizing the region? And the answer is both, I understand, but which one is more significant? Is Israel going to be strengthened as much as the region will be destabilized, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, there's no question that the balance of power is in Israel's favor, especially with the newly inked $40 billion aid deal over the next 10 years, an absolute groundbreaking largest aid deal ever, which, of course, is military aid. So I think there's no question who holds the upper hand, and if there is a renewed and revivified push for settlement, continuation of settlement, and a sense that America is going to be 110% on Tel Aviv's side, I don't think there's any question that this redounds definitely to Israel's benefit at the expense of Palestine and any other would-be aggressors on Israel.
Here's another little article from the Associated Press that is, it's linked to what's happening in Israel, I think intimately. And we're going to get started on it, but we'll take a break here before probably we can get finished on this. But the headline is Trump willing to work with Russia against the Islamic State. Trump administration says it's willing to partner with Moscow to combat the Islamic State group. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the administration will work with Russia or anyone else to defeat the militant group, either militarily or economically. President has vowed to defeat the Islamic State quickly when he takes office. let's just talk about quickly. Let's just start with that. Quick is quickly. And what does this bode for the Islamic State? Is there going to be a settlement, a peace deal, or are they going to be crushed?
Well, again, if we listen to the rhetoric, it is crushed. But again, I hate to be constantly saying this, but I don't think we necessarily should trust the rhetoric. And there are counterindications to the idea that this is going to be a quick and swift and steady partnership. And in fact, Brandon Turbeville had an article up on Activist Post just the other day. Alleged U.S.-Russian cooperation called into question. Is Trump also hostile to Assad? And it's talking about some of the rhetoric that indicates that the Trump administration is going to be equally as stalwart as the Obama administration was on the idea of regime change or not abiding President Assad in Syria. And if that's the case, then it's difficult to see how they can form any sort of meaningful relationship with Russia on the Syrian issue. Perhaps they can agree on coordinated military action on ISIS. And if so, certainly if Russia and the U.S. coordinated, there's no doubt that they could wipe ISIS off the face of the map pretty quickly. So it could be done. The real question is, will it be done? And if Trump is serious about being staunchly against Assad, then again, the political calculation is, well, to what extent do you want to help Assad against his enemies, ISIS?
This article says on Monday the Russian Defense Ministry announced that it had carried out a joint airstrike mission with the U.S.-led coalition warplanes against the Islamic State in Syria. That claim was immediately denied by the Pentagon.
Exactly right, yeah.
What's happening here? This is we is or is we ain't?
Fake news.
Yeah, fake news or politically incorrect news. Did we really have the joint airstrike? That's the fact of the issue, one way or the other. And we could find out what was true, what was false. Where I'm going with this, when we come back from the break, we can talk about this. If Russia and the U.S. are willing to work together as partners to combat the Islamic State, is the Islamic State doomed? We already talked about that a little bit. Does Trump's new relationship with Russia change America's relationship to Syria? From what you're saying, the answer is probably no. Assad is still persona non grata. And we'll have more. We'll have a couple more questions when we return. Got to take a break for a couple commercials right now. I'll be back with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T. Corbettreport.com. We're talking about the impact that Trump has had on Israel. They're planning to put up another 2,500 homes in territory that the Palestinians claim. Some people think there are reports, there is a report that Trump is willing to work with Russia against the Islamic State. We were posing some of the questions that flow from this. If the United States and Russia work together, the Islamic State is toast. If Trump's new relationship with Russia, if there is a new relationship, and I think there's going to be, do you think there's any question that there's going to be certainly an improved relationship with Russia as compared to what existed under the Obama administration?
I can't imagine how it could get worse. So, yeah. Yes, I'm expecting it to improve.
We are, in theory, that people were concerned that World War III was... Some people thought it was imminent. Given that Trump is there, does World War III seem in the same place, or is it backed off?
Well, at least the direct NATO confrontation with Russia does seem to be a less imminent threat. But I don't think that, in fact, if anything, the threat increases in places like Iran, which has been vocally and demonstrably targeted by Trump himself, as well as several of his key administration appointees, and also in China, of course. So, again, I'm not necessarily sure that there is no threat, but at any rate, that imminent threat in Eastern Europe does seem a little bit diminished by this.
Mm-hmm. Trump's new relationship is positive with Russia. Well, the question you'd already talked about it to some degree, is America's relationship with Syria also going to improve in the sense that we're not going to try to unseat Assad? You're familiar with someone's opinion that says, you mentioned someone who's convinced that we are still going to be out to get Assad. Just for my own edification, do you think that's Trump's opinion?
Or do So this comes from Brandon Turbeville at activistpost.com, and in his article he's quoting the press secretary Sean Spicer, who hinted at the possibility that the U.S. is still hostile to President Assad under Trump. He said, quote, "We're not going to get together with people under the guise of defeating ISIS if that's not truly their guise. So let's not take that too far." And he was responding specifically to a question about the potential for cooperation with Assad in targeting ISIS. So, at any rate, they're saying that, don't get carried away with that kind of speculation. Doesn't mean we're on Assad's side here. And again, we'll, as always, devil's in the details. We'll see what that means in terms of, does that mean that they're still insisting Assad must go? Or is that just saying that we're not going to cooperate with the Syrian government per se, but we'll go for ISIS?
What about if Trump has a new relationship that's at least more positive, maybe not positive per se, but more positive with Russia? Does that change Israel's relationship to Russia?
Well, there's no doubt that it will affect all of the different relationships with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good question. And I'm not an expert enough on Israel-Russia relations to know how precisely that would be affected.
Well, I don't expect that anyone is, but, you know, Israel, my understanding, my limited understanding, is that Israel and Russia have been, you know, adversaries of sorts for a number of years. I haven't seen much evidence that they're buddies and pals that I'm aware of. But if Trump is getting along with Russia, does Israel get along with Russia? I mean, the whole thing becomes, you know, what a juggling performance. Everything is destabilized.
Yeah.
It's now all
it really
up for grabs.
Well, everything is in flux right now. And I wrote about that in last weekend's International Forecaster article called Chaos Out of Order, talking about the chaos that clearly everyone feels. No matter what you think about Trump and what's happening, I think everyone understands the world is in flux right now and everything's on the table. So, regarding Israel and Russia, I think you brought up an article from a couple of months ago about Israel shifting strategies to prepare for long-time Russian presence in region, which is an interesting and intriguing idea. But more specifically, we could look at consortiumnews.com, which had an article from last September, Neocon Dilemma, Israeli-Russian Détente. And it says, as official Washington's neocons lead the charge into a new Cold War, deeming Russia as an implacable enemy, an inconvenient truth is that the neocons' beloved Israel is warming its relationship with Moscow. So if the Trump administration's warming relations with Russia leads to Israel getting the green light for warming relations with Russia, then yes, that does seem to be in exact opposition to the neocons that had circled around the Clinton campaign and their idea of trying to limit, you know, Putin as some sort of pariah on the world stage. And it would definitely change that calculus for a lot of nations, including Israel.
What do you think the establishment is going to do about Trump? What do you think the neocons are going to do about Trump? Do they have to just put up with him, or are there acts they can take to move the world back in their direction more so than in the direction of populism or whatever it is that Trump represents?
Well, I think at this point we're going to have to see or have to try to parse the difference between the above surface state and the deep state. And I think that the powers that are arrayed against what is happening right now, like the neocons and other disaffected malcontents, are going to be nesting and burrowing themselves deeper into the deep state, which I think generally has the upper hand in these situations, because it's always a question of who controls the information, the dirty goods, the skeletons in the closet. And if you are in a position of power in something like the NSA, for example, then you obviously have the upper hand in that relationship. So it will have to be, I think that something to be watching carefully will be the way in which the Trump appointees to the various intelligence agencies, CIA and others, work to restore order in their organizations. And of course it was significant that Trump's first major press conference or appearance as president took place at CIA headquarters, and saying, you know, I'm with you. And he received quite a warm welcome at that, which seems to indicate, as others have been saying, that there is a difference between the rank and file kind of average CIA versus the people who have been in positions of power in the top ranks of the CIA in the Obama administration. And it was those top ranks people who were more against Trump. And it's not the average kind of, you know, average working stiff, as it were, if there is such a thing in the CIA. And that does seems to be playing out. So we'll see if a change in leadership will really rid itself of that problem. But we know how changes in leadership don't necessarily translate into changes in action or policy, as when Kennedy got rid of Dulles from the CIA, but didn't really get rid of Dulles from the CIA, because, of course, you still have your cadre of men who are loyal to you, not necessarily loyal to whoever happens to be in that directorship. So,
why do you think
it's a complicated relationship?
Why do you think that people maintain loyalty to an individual rather than loyalty to their institution like the CIA? And where I'm going with this is it simply human nature that we have more loyalty to the people we know than we do to any of the other ideas that float around? I can profess loyalty to my country, to my state, to my city, whatever, but when push comes to shove, is it just human nature that my real loyalty goes to the people that I deal with on a daily basis?
To the extent that's true for you and me and the average Joe, I think it's doubly, triply, 100 times more so in the intelligence field itself. I think we tend to think of these intelligence agencies as just another bureaucracy in the federal government. I think it's more fruitful to look at them essentially as secret societies. They are secret societies. They emerged from the secret society milieu, and there's no secret. I mean, there's an overwhelming preponderance of Yaleys in the CIA, always has been, and Skull and Bones, of course, has been absolutely instrumental in that. And I think that's not just an historical coincidence. I think intelligence agencies are secret societies of a sort, and that's where they recruit their memberships. And in a secret society, it's not some abstract, you know, it's not the society per se, or the person who happens to be the head of that society. It is the people that you know, your brothers under the skin, as the Bonesmen called them, the people that you personally develop those relationships with while working in that position. And you know you share that same ideology, and you know these guys do, and you know that the whole purpose of the organization is to deceive others about what it is and what it's doing and what it stands for. So you don't necessarily trust anyone that you don't know in those positions. And I think that's why, especially in intelligence, compartmentalization is so important, and who you know is really the deciding factor in terms of, you know, where your allegiances lie.
You imply that the CIA may be composed of a number of fiefdoms. There's at least some sort of a significant division between one side and the other side within the CIA, and there may be multiple divisions. It's like the Balkans, right? We call it the CIA, but we don't have a unified institution where everybody's marching in lockstep in a particular direction.
And it wouldn't even be possible given the way it's structured, because of course there is that compartmentalization built in. You don't necessarily know what the person sitting at the desk next to you, literally or metaphorically, is working on, because you don't have access to it. You don't have the right clearance. Need-to-know basis is how intelligence agencies are structured. So you might have more in common with someone that you're coordinating with, even in a different agency, or even someone who's in deep undercover who's not officially with the agency or what have you, than someone you're working side-by-side with. And that's why I think it's very naive to look at the CIA as the CIA, as if it's one unit that works in lockstep on everything.
That's actually a pretty good observation. It's a nice insight, in part because everything's on a need-to-know basis, which means you leave a lot of people who would like to know, but they don't know. They're left with a need to speculate. Right? What's really going on here? What the heck are they doing over there? And so-and-so. And there, nobody's going to tell you. And you might even be right. Your speculation might be correct. I know what they're up to. Right?
I'm sure for any complicated operation, there are many people who have one piece of the puzzle who can say, I know this about whatever, the Oklahoma City bombing or what have you, but I don't know the rest of the story because I'm not privy to that information. And I can guess, you know, it looks like maybe that was involved with that and this person was there. But the people at the top of that pyramid who aren't necessarily the director or people in those positions, but the people who have all of the access to all of those different programs and things that are going on will know the actual story.
Do you think that the CIA, CIA agents and operatives and administrators, they spend most of their time trying to deduce what Russia is up to? Or do they spend most of their time trying to deduce what other elements of the CIA are up to?
I would not be surprised to learn it's more of the latter than the former, because
yeah,
I think everyone understands that the American intelligence community is the most largest, the most well-funded of any in the world, and clearly has its fingers in every pie around the world. And as you say, I mean, people can't necessarily be sure what people they're working with on a daily basis are actually doing, and who they're working for and with, and in what way they might be betraying or backstabbing, or in other ways getting, you know, sort of undermining what's happening. And the more you look into the actual history of the way different operations are run, I mean, people like to say, oh, it's not conspiracy, it's just incompetence, because no one can really coordinate something like that. Well, I think there is an element to that. When you look at, for example, the Phoenix program and how that was run in Vietnam, Douglas Valentine's written books about that. It's fascinating stuff, very chilling stuff, about the way the counterterrorism, quote-unquote, was run in Vietnam. But it was, I mean, a thing with many, many different heads, lots of different agencies and bureaucracies all had their fingers in that pie. And it's doubtful that anyone quite understood the entire system and how it was working, because there were so many different people with so many cooks trying to, you know, mm-hmm. make that broth.
And trying to maintain secrecy. This implies that insofar as they have these multiple groups who are only guessing at what's going on, it predisposes them not only to division, internal division, but perhaps even functioning as double agents and engaging in treason. You get into a situation, I don't know what these people are doing over there, but I think they're up to something. And maybe they're making money, why not me? Do you see the... I'm trying to illustrate the idea that the very nature of intelligence, because it's secretive, it predisposes people to be susceptible to becoming double agents. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely does, and especially if you get one of those double agents into a position of relative power in the agency that can coordinate other people in what they're doing, and then can use that compartmentalization to manipulate people into doing things they don't even understand. And it really is. That's why the deep state can really wield the ace card in any hand they're dealt, because they always have that extra layer of information that other people don't.
We've got about 30 seconds left. James, would you like to do a pitch for the Corbett Report? Tell us what you've got up there lately. Fresh videos, fresh podcasts, whatever.
I am working on a podcast that I hope to deliver tomorrow about the Indian cashless biometric experiment and what that means for people around the world as that is rolled out elsewhere. So I hope people will keep their eye on that. It's at CorbettReports.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. All my work is up there for free, and I hope people will support it by becoming members of the site.
Okay, James, thanks very much for being on the program. Always a pleasure, always interesting. That's James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, with good Lord bless you, me, Melody, James Corbett, Todd the producer. Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my